Jerome Zerbe was a photographer of the beautiful people long before that phrase became part of the American lexicon. He was the first of society photographers, and he recalls the 30s and the Depression.
From 1935 to 1939, I worked El Morocco, and I invented a thing which has become a pain in the neck to most people. I took photographs of the fashionable people and sent them to the papers. And Maury Paul on the Journal American at least four times a week would use a large photograph on his society page.
This is your idea. The idea
yes.
of photographs
yes.
of the fashionable people on the society page.
In
we're
a nightclub.
Now, aren't we? We're talking about the 30s, aren't we?
We're talking about 1935
okay.
on.
And you see, the reason you were at the Rainbow Room in the El Morocco is because there is where the social set went, isn't it?
No, the social set did not go to the Rainbow Room or to El Morocco until I invented this funny, silly thing of taking photographs of people. And the minute the photographs appeared in the paper, then they came.
They became celebrities
yes,
at that moment.
That's right.
Okay.
So I would send my photographs not only to the New York papers. I sent them to the London Bystander, to the Australian, I've forgotten what the name now was. There was a paper in Rio. I sent them all over the world. So people would come in to El Morocco, and I'd get a note saying, the Duchess of Sutherland has just arrived and would love to have her photograph taken.
As you're talking, Jerry, I don't know. Go ahead.
Yes, all right. What are you
tell me about these people who came to El Morocco. Now, these were more or less the upper, if I can use this phrase, the upper crust.
Yes, they were. They were really the top social. And what do you mean by society? That's difficult again to
yes.
define. These were the people whose houses one knew were filled with treasures. These were the women who dressed the best. These were the women who had the most beautiful of all jewels. These were the dream people that we all looked up to and hoped that we or our friends could sometimes know and be like.
Do you recall the crash, the stock market crash occurred in 29?
No, because it didn't hit the family. My father had coal mines, and it didn't hit the coal mines until 31. And he still gave me the $300 a month allowance, and I went to Paris and lived it up.
That was it. Your father was a coal operator.
Yes.
Where was this?
He was president of the Ohio and Pennsylvania Coal Company, which was, it was the West Virginia border, Cadiz, Ohio.
Cadiz,
where Clark Gable was born. And I went down there because they, at that time, offered me the presidency. At $12,000 a year, which was incredibly large amount of money. I'm talking about 32 or 33. And I went down there and I spent 2 weeks in the town. The mine was 897 feet, the shaft underground, and the working surface 3.5 miles underground. And I spent 2 weeks down there and came back and said, Mother, forgive me. To hell with it.
Did you notice what's going on around town? Or?
Yes, you bet. The men loathed their slovenly wives. And every night they'd go and play pool or whatever it was. The houses were drab beyond belief. You'd think a woman wouldn't at least put a plant out, a flower, something.
Yeah.
And suddenly I flew into town with two or three friends for several weekends. We disrupted that goddamn place like nobody's business.
How did you do that?
Well, we'd go to the bars and we'd just say, they'd have pool parlors and everything like that. And these guys would say, oh, Jesus, we didn't know guys like you could dress like this. Or where'd you get your shirts? Where'd you do this? Or where'd you do that? And began asking, and I said, why don't you go to your houses and make them more attractive? And they said, our wives are so goddamn slovenly, we don't even want to go to bed with them.
You're talking about the miners now, aren't
you?
Yeah,
I'm talking about the miners. The guys who worked out, they came out at 5 o'clock at night, absolutely filthy dirty, naturally. I've got a photograph myself I can show you as a miner, how filthy I was.
Oh, did you wear a costume of mine?
I had to. All the days I was down there, of course. And they all went through this common shower, got clean. Would they go home? Huh. For food, yes. And they're sprawling brats and take it right off to the local bar. They loathe their life. And the manager once said to me, you know, I never knew what it was to have fun with people until I heard the laughter. And this brings up another story, which I think might interest you. The first time I photographed King Paul of Greece, became a great friend. He said, Mrs. Zerbe, you and I have many friends in common. Do you realize in our position, we are never allowed to laugh? Everybody treats us with such respect. And I hear you have outrageous stories.
Well, many people are on welfare today. Do you recall, were the people whom you know, the people of the register, the beautiful people, as we call them today, were they, did they ever talk about what happened outside? Meantime, there were bread lines, there were various other things occurring, not too nice, you know.
As I remember, I don't think they ever mentioned them. In other words, they did in private at the breakfast table, at the tea table, at cocktail time, but never socially. Because I've always had a theory. When you're out with friends, out socially, everything must be charming. And you don't allow the ugly. We don't even discuss the Negro question. Let's forget they're only 0.1% of this country and what they're putting on this act. Someday they're going to be stepped on like vermins. I'm starting a thing, equal rights for whites. It may never get off the ground, but I think that they've allowed themselves with their necklaces and their long hair and all the nonsense to go too far. What they need to need is qualifications for good jobs. And once they have that, now I've had the same manservant who was a Negro for 33 years, which is quite a record. And I suppose he's my closest friend in the world. He's a great guy. And Joseph.
He knows.
But Joseph and I know. I'm only a part-time man for him now. He's the financial head of the Harlem YMCA. But he comes here every morning and brings me our breakfast.
Those beads that they wear, the beads.
Well, he's revolted. Except, I must say, Joe, the other day said, don't you have a chain? And I said, Joe, what do you mean by chain? And he laughed and said, well, you know, those things you wear around. I said, of course, I must have one. And I gave him one. I had three or four because people send them to me, as people do send things to people.
But the beads are worn by beautiful people today. Is that the point I'm trying to
make? Well, that's right.
That's interesting.
And I was thinking tonight I have to go out to dinner wearing my Nehru jacket.
Yeah.
And, but I don't have my Malta cross, which has blue enamel and diamonds, which is really very good, because I loaned it to somebody, I'd have to wear what I love, which is my Zuni Indian.
Your Zuni Indian?
Yes. And this is authentic and good, and people all accept that.
When you were doing the El Morocco photos and seeing the people, what was happening around the city? Do you remember the People talk of bread lines or Hooverville's or apple cellars.
No, there were none of those.
No.
Not in New York. Never. Never. There were a few beggars. And you became to recognize them because they'd be on one block one day and one block the next day. And finally, one day I saw this pathetic beggar whom I'd always felt so sorry for. And this Cadillac drove up. I'd just given him a quarter and picked him up with a woman driving it. And I thought, well, if they can have a Cadillac, they don't need my quarter.
You mean the beggar had a Cadillac?
His wife did, apparently. Mm. Picked him up.
You don't recall things like bread lines or stuff like that.
I never saw one. Mm. In those days, never in New York. Mm. Never. If they were in Harlem or down in the village or somewhere, they were never in this section of town. There was never any signs of poverty.
If I were to say to you the phrase, Jerome Zerbe, New Deal, what's the first thought comes to your mind?
New Deal? Well, that was an invention of Franklin Roosevelt's. It meant absolutely nothing except higher taxation. And that he did. He obviously didn't help the poverty situation in the country, although I suppose, I don't know, New Deal? God, look at the crap he brought into our country. Jesus.
People on relief. Is it a different thing today than there was then? Do you remember the many people?
Listen, we had no little bastards dressed as they are today putting on acts in those days. The children were slapped down by their parents. I think they're encouraged by their parents today. I think our country is in a very dangerous and precarious position, and I would predict, if I dared, that within 20 or 30 years, we're going to have a complete revolution here in America, and that the Democratic and Republican Party will be out completely, and there'll be other parties in charge, and probably a dictatorship.
Are you for this?
No, but I just feel the signs, the portents are going that way.
Because why? Because...
Well, I mean, anybody, look what happened to Columbia. Why didn't those turn the fire hoses on those little bastards and get them out right away instead of tolerating them, instead of waiting for days and days and days and allowing them to take over the university buildings and destroy pour water down through the files?
Any other thought comes to your mind on the postscript? The 30s, Jerome Zerbe, society, where we are right now. Our last image.
It was a glamorous, glittering moment.
Jerome Zerbe, society photographer, recalling the 30s and the Depression.